Good morning, everyone. This meeting of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee will now come to order. It is 8 a.m. Thursday, March 14th, 2024, in room Capital 124. Happy Pi Day. Happy birthday to Representative Hemshute. Members present are Representative Baker, Representative McKay, Representative Mears, Representative Ruffridge, Representative Hemshute, Representative McCabe, and myself, Representative McCormick. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, I would like to thank Sophia Tenney, the committee secretary from Records, and Doug Bridges from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. Today we will be hearing an introduction to HB 345 by Representative Story, followed by public testimony on HB 347 by Representative Coulomb. And lastly, to finish up, we will hear an introduction to HB 151 by Representative Kronk. So with that, Representative Story and staff, would you please come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin your bill presentation.
Thank you, Chair McCormick. Good to see all of you and the members of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. And thank you for hearing this bill today. For the record, I am Representative Andy Story, proudly representing House District 3, which is the Northern Mendenhall Valley here in Juneau, Haynes, Clequan, Gustavus, and Skagway.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Joan Wilkerson, aide to Representative Andy Story.
Before you is House Bill 345, Version B, Safety Ladders. The idea for this bill came from a constituent who came to my office seeking legislation that would require safety ladders on docks. He'd had an employee who had tragically drowned relating to a dock. My constituent felt that if there had been safety ladders on the dock, this person or others might be better able to save themselves. When a person using a floating dock falls into our very cold water, they are unlikely without help to be able to climb back up on the dock because there is nothing for them to grab onto from the water. Among the backup documents from this bill file is a State of Alaska epidemiology report that shows 26% of Alaska's drownings between 2016 and 2021 were in the ocean or harbors. But safety ladders can save lives. A person in the water can reach up and pull down the lowest rung of the ladder to enable them to climb up or at least stabilize their position while awaiting help. This bill would promote water safety in every municipality in our state that maintains a floating dock by requiring the installation of safety ladders as part of an award of funds from a harbor facility grant fund. This bill has a zero fiscal note because the municipalities would pay for the ladders from the grant. In bulk, the cost is approximately $210 per ladder. Alaskans rely heavily on docks for both personal access to fishing and commercial and personal recreation uses. Hauling cargo or tourists boating, fishing, these docks allow people to access boats to take advantage of what Alaska's waterways have to offer. It only makes sense to make them safer in this reasonable economic way. Since I have been working on this bill, awareness of this issue has already made me personally safer on the docks. Why? Because in talking with local harbor master about safety ladders, he informed me that many of Juneau floating docks have put up safety ladders with a sign, safety ladder, right next to the ladder. I was not aware of this. Sure enough, on my walks at the Hawke Bay Statter Harbor, I have noticed them now, and they're on long poles like a bicycle ladder, safety pole, making the spot noticeable. Depending on the will of the committee, as we learn more about this bill, my legislative aide, Joan Wilkerson, is available to walk through the short sectional analysis. I also have two invited testifiers, including our Juneau Harbor Master, who is the Alaska Harbor Master of the Year 2023, Matt Cresswell. He will testify about his quest to install safety ladders on municipal docks in Juneau. I want to point out that Harbor Master Cresswell leveraged a federal fisheries disaster grant fund to expand safety ladder installations to include innovative flag markings. Also, we will hear from Laura Edfelt of Juneau, a friend of the woman whose drowning death was the impetus for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Story. I guess we'll, Ms. Wilkerson, if you could go through the sectional analysis.
Okay. I'm Joan Wilkerson, aide to Rep Story. Section 1 amends Alaska Statute 2960810 by adding a new subsection, which requires that a municipality or regional housing authority that owns a harbor facility and submits an application for a harbor facility grant for major maintenance, repair, construction, or expansion of the facility to have safety ladders on its floats or install them on the proposed new float once built. It would take effect in July of 2024 if it was passed into law. I can take any questions if you have any.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, I think we'll go into invited testimony now.
Chair McCormick, they are in the room.
Okay, great. Mr. Cresswell, if you'd like to come forward.
Good morning. Thank you to the members of the committee for hearing this bill. And my name's Matt Cresswell, Juneau Harbor Master, and I live in the Minimal Valley. So you want just my testimony or question? Okay, so we were aware of the drowning out of the National Parks dock out past Indian Cove and Alt Bay. That happened around the same time we were starting our push for safety ladders in the harbor. For the committee, there is not a code requirement that floating docks and harbors have safety ladders. It has been common practice throughout the harbors, especially in Southeast Alaska, that's what I'm most familiar with, to install safety ladders when recapitalizing any particular harbor. We started that idea in Juneau with large aluminum ladders that were hanging at the head of each main float. The problem we realized with that was that it took two people to get somebody out of the water, and there was no self-rescue capability for somebody that would fall in the water. So what we found was a product called an up-and-out ladder. I think there's maybe pictures of them in your packet, where they're completely stored out of the water. They're lag-bolted to the dock. If somebody falls in and needs to self-rescue, they can simply reach up, find that ladder, pull it down, and it enters the water deep enough where they can get their foot on it and climb out and self-rescue. We have had people use them in Juneau Harbors over the last few years. We started this about 30 months ago, just piecemeal putting them in little by little. And most of that came out of operating funds. I was able to get a grant from the North Pacific Regional Fisheries Commission for the 2018 cod disaster, and that could be used for any number of things in the harbors. We used that money to install safety ladders, not finish our project, but to advance our project quite a bit. We've installed nearly 200 of these ladders over the last 30 months, and what that has gotten Juneau is there is a safety ladder within 100 feet of any given boat in the harbors now. We're not done. We would like to cut that down to within every 50 feet. Right now, there's a ladder per every four boats as you walk down the docks. When we put these ladders in, we realized they weren't visible. And if you're walking with your blinders on down the dock going to your boat, you won't even realize that those ladders are there. So it was mentioned earlier, we got 4-foot-long orange, like you'd see, like bicycle safety flags or like you'd see delineators for snow on the side of a driveway, with flags on the top of them that say safety ladder. So our hope is that as people are walking the docks, they just make a mental note that those orange flags mean safety ladders, so that in the case they did fall in, they would be able to reach back and say, I know there's a safety ladder close by. That's been a great success. We've publicized that widely on our department Facebook page and through CBJ press releases, gotten tons of positive feedback on that. To my knowledge, the rest of the Southeast Alaska harbors do have safety ladders. To what degree and how many, I don't know. But when I walk other harbors, when I'm visiting other communities, I see the ladders in their harbors. So this is a good step to just bring it being that it's non-code for building things, it's a good step for people. We think it'll help when people are designing harbors that they'll incorporate safety ladders into that. And most harbors that are recapitalized in one way or another are using that state harbor facility grant program. So this would be a good vehicle to get that in and get that on people's mind.
Thank you for your testimony this morning, Mr. Cresswell. Vice Chair McCabe, did I see you had a question for Mr. Cresswell? No?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how much do these cost, the ladders?
They tend to go between $200 and $230. You get discounts for buying in bulk. When I buy, I use about 20 at a time and get a 10% discount or so, but a little over $200 a piece. And installation is 15 minutes of staff time per ladder.
And follow-up? One follow-up. Thanks. So how much do they impact boat mooring? I mean, are they in the way or is it...
So this was something we struggled with, where to put the ladders. What we've decided on is anybody that's familiar with our harbors and most others, you have what we call stalls or slips. And in each stall, there are really two boats because with the finger floats, so there's a boat moored port side, a boat moored up starboard side too. What we did was position that ladder in the middle of that stall so that at no time would it impede the proper mooring and tying up of that vessel. We did have concerns that people may try to tie their boats to them and this and that. We haven't come across that yet, and we do. I have it set up on a quarterly preventative maintenance cycle where all of our nearly 200 ladders are in our computerized maintenance system where they're checked. There's a preventative maintenance schedule and work order that's created every quarter for every one of those ladders, and they're checked for make sure they go up and down properly. They're clean. They're not bent and damaged. So, yeah, you put something in. If you don't take care of it, then it may not be there when needed. So that's something we realized we needed to do.
Cool. Seems like a relatively cheap thing. Thanks for what we get for it.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair McCormick. Just a comment, actually. I think that Harbor Master is probably in the top five coolest job titles.
I think so, too.
Are there any additional questions or comments? Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, through the chair. I can't resist commenting that it's also known as Harbor Monster in some communities, and in Petersburg, it's Harbor Mother. So it's a very beloved term for a very important position. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Cresswell, that begs a question for me. What title do you prefer?
Pick a day, pick a name, and I'll come to it.
All right. Are there any other questions or comments? Hearing none, Mr. Cresswell, thank you for your testimony this morning and also just for your service to your community. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
So I believe next we have Ms. Edfelt. If you'd like to come forward, state your name for the record. You can begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is Laura Edfelt, and I would like to offer some testimony and to read from a letter on behalf of Anna's friends and family, excuse me. I would like to thank the committee for the time to listen, and I would like to thank Representative Story for moving this forward. I'd like to share a story about my friend Anna on behalf of all her friends, family, and colleagues. Anna was a recent resident of Alaska, and she was so excited to be here, to enjoy all that our beautiful state has, to see and experience. Her personality was vibrant, and her happiness and joy in life were infectious to those around her. You couldn't help but be enchanted by Anna and her laugh, or the squeals of joy out on the boat when she saw her first whale or caught her first king salmon. It was just a good reminder of all that we enjoy on a regular basis here. Anna enjoyed adventure in many ways. She loved the outdoors. She enjoyed swimming and taking the occasional short plunge in the cold waters of Southeast. She normally would have somebody with her because we've cautioned her that's a good idea. And on the night of October 17th, 2021, the skies were clear and the temperatures were near freezing. Anna went for a walk in the evening alone with her 100-pound Labrador retriever, Ozzy, to observe the northern lights. She decided to take a quick swim off the dock at Indian Cove here in Juneau, not realizing how very cold the water would be and how much of a shock it would be to her system. Anna drowned that night. Anna was in good health. She was a strong, fit woman, 38 years of age. The investigating officer told us that she attempted to pull herself up out of the water by multiple means, but was unable to do so. They found her dog with his harness pulled off him. She tried every which way. The investigating officer also told us, had there been an egress ladder, she would have been able to pull herself out and she would be alive today. Mm-hmm. I would like, since Anna's mother cannot be here, there's a piece of this letter that Miss Ellen Foltz wrote, and she says, "Hello, my name is Ellen Foltz. I had the privilege of seeing beautiful Alaska in June of 2021 when my daughter Anna convinced me to embark on a jet ski adventure up the Inside Passage with Dangerous Water Adventures. I was reluctant to do it, but it turned out to be one of the best things I've ever done in my life. Going on an exciting adventure with my only daughter, little did I know that June, when I hugged her goodbye, it would be the last time I saw her. Anna drowned 3 months later in Indian Cove the night of October 17th. The forensics verified that she had tried to climb up the barnacled piling of the dock, trying to get out of the frigid water. That image of my child struggling in the cold water will haunt me to the end of my days. Today, March 14th, oddly enough, is her birthday. Anna would have been 41. I strongly urge that Bill 345 supporting the installation of safety ladders through the harbor grants be passed to help reduce tragic accidental drownings such as Anna's. Thank you, Ellen Foltz." And in closing, I would just like to leave you with some food for thought or some things to ponder while you consider this bill. The United States has 12,383 miles of coastline, and of those, 6,640 belong to Alaska, 53.6%. How many harbors are there along that coastline? And how many docks? How many of us have loved ones, both young and old, who use those docks in pursuit of various activities? Have you ever been to an indoor swimming pool in Alaska that didn't have an egress ladder in every corner? Probably not. A pool is shallow with warm water. Most times there are multiple people and a lifeguard is present. And yet safety rules required by federal or state law or city ordinance require that multiple egress ladders be present in such pools. Our harbors along our coastlines with often frigid waters and few people around do not have such a requirement. These ladders are not expensive and could save someone you know and love someday, which makes them priceless. Please consider moving this bill forward and eventually making it a law. Thank you again for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much for your testimony this morning, Ms. Edfeld. You know, coming forward and sharing that story really will make a difference and will really save a lot of lives. So I just want to thank you. Thank you for having the courage to come before this and share that with us all. Are there any questions or comments from Ms. Edfeld? Representative Hemshute.
Thank you. Through the chair, I just wanted to add, either now or with Rip's story, but I wanted you to know we've lost a few people in Sitka. Often alcohol was involved, but it doesn't matter. For whatever reason, the person falls in and can't get out. So we've put these ladders in. So from a municipal point of view, having the financial support to do it through the state harbor grant is going to be extremely beneficial. And we also had to learn the hard way. So thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments? Okay. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Hedfeld. Representative Story. Ms. Wilkerson, before we set this aside this morning, I just brief at ease. We're now back on the record, Representative Story. just curious, or I just wanted to afford you the opportunity to make any closing remarks that you might have.
Thank you, Chair McCormick and the committee members. Thank you very much for hearing the bill today. I thank the Harbor Master Cresswell for his testimony, of course, and then also the heartfelt testimony of Laura. So thank you again. And I really feel that this bill can really help save lives, and I appreciate your attention to it.
Thank you. Brief at ease. You just discussion. I think we're all satisfied with the testimony we heard this morning. We're just going to go ahead and move the bill. So, I want to thank you very much for bringing this forward, and I want to thank the members for being willing to move these expediently. So, I would entertain a motion to move the bill from committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee report House Bill number 345, Work Order 33-LS1378, version Bravo, from committee with attached zero fiscal notes and amendments, any amendments, and I authorize Ledge Legal to do any conforming changes if needed.
Thank you, Vice Chair McCabe. Are there any objections? Hearing none, HB 345 passes. We'll take a brief at ease. Now, back on the record and not talking about kumquats anymore, Representative Coulomb and Ms. Peters, Preston, would you please come forward to put yourself on the record and just provide a brief recap of HB 347 before we begin public testimony?
Thank you, Chair McCormick. My name is Julie Colom. I'm a representative for District 11, which is South Anchorage Hillside.
Hi, my name is Aaliyah Preston, and I am a staffer for Representative Colom.
So HB 347 helps communities by providing a path of fairness and transparency around property assessment. It sets standards for Alaskans to know that the rules for the assessing property values. It changes the default for those who hear tax appeals to an appointed board of equalization. It stops a municipality from raising the assessed value during an appeal process in the same year, and ensures assessors have the required experience and certifications to assess. And it requires the Board of Education to explain disagreements with any fee appraisals. So this is just an opportunity for taxpayers to be able to have a fair shake in the tax assessment process.
Thank you, Representative Coulomb. As time allows, we'll probably have you come back if any members have any questions. But now we're going to jump into public testimony. Before we get started, I'll just let our testifiers know I'm going to set the timeline at 2 minutes per testifier. We've got quite a few folks calling in this morning and another bill to get to. So 2 minutes, if you exceed 2 minutes, I'll let you know and kind of give you a 30-second grace period, but that doesn't mean you use all those 30 seconds. So we'll now open public testimony on House Bill 347. So I know we have some folks in the room. Oh, okay. Frank Bergstrom, if you'd please come forward, put yourself on the record, you begin your testimony.
My name is Frank Bergstrom from Juneau, Alaska. I support House Bill 347. When government takes people's money, it is incumbent upon it to provide documentation of the reasoning to do so. Otherwise, it can appear to be arbitrary and capricious. A fee appraisal should be definitive in itself, but if not, there should be clear reasoning as to why not. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your succinct testimony this morning, Mr. Bergstrom. Next, we have Roy Josephson.
My name is Roy Josephson. I'm from Haines. And in the 90s, I built a cement pad on our lot at home and for my kids to play basketball on, which they used extensively. Then it became a spot to park my boats. And in 2021, we built a storage shed on top of this old cement pad that sloped and had cracks in it. And our first notice from the assessor's office came on the adjacent lot where we had cleared the trees to build to get the lumber for the barn. We called it the barn, and flattened an area to park the boats. But this was a corrected assessment, and it showed a building value of $185,000 on this lot. Well, this is an obvious error, we said, so we appealed immediately. The assessor's office came back and informed us that this was due to the barn and that they would come out and show us which lot it was on. We said, well, we know which lot it's on, and it's not a single-family residence. It's a barn. And they said, well, it looked like a house to us. So they agreed to take the value of the building off that adjacent lot, but they put it on our home lot. And as much as we encouraged them to come look, they would not come look at it. They would not agree. It's built with rough-cut lumber. There's no water in it. We've since ran a hose out there because we do a little hydroponic building in there. But so we had that corrected notice, and then we received a second corrected notice on the adjacent lot where they kept the building at zero, but then they raised the land 45%. And we felt that was vindictive. And so we appealed both lots. But when I first received these corrected notices, I said,
Mr. Josephson, I apologize to interrupt, but it's been 2 minutes. So if you can wrap up your testimony. Okay.
I said, they're too late. They've missed the deadlines. There's deadlines for the BOE. There's deadlines to get your packets in. There's all these deadlines. Well, apparently they're for the people, not for the government. And they apparently can do this, change your assessment and form a BOE any time of the year. And we think that's wrong. And anyway, I support House Bill 347. I think it's a start in the right direction.
Thank you for your testimony this morning, Mr. Josephson. I apologize. I never want to cut anyone off, but unfortunately, we only have 2 hours to get this thing done. Next, we have Aaron Landville. No. Okay, you're not testifying. Okay, I apologize. We will move now to the telephone. Just for folks who are watching, if you needed the call-in numbers, if you're calling from the Juneau prefix, 907-586-9085, from Anchorage, 907-563-9085, and from any other area, 1-844-586-9085 is the number to call in and testify. First, we have Jennifer Canfield from Haines. If you could state your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
My name is Jennifer Canfield. I'm from Haines, Alaska, and I'd like to start by thanking you for your time. In 2022, my assessed value jumped from $188,400 to $495,400. We were told this was due to the addition of my parents' new home and a new barn. In 2023, I received an initial assessment of $616,000 and then a corrected notice of $864,000. We were again told this was due to the addition of my parents' new home and a new barn. At our first BOE hearing, the assessor reduced his request to $818,700, but the case was remanded back to the assessor for another site visit. We then obtained a professional fee appraisal of $620,000. After that information was submitted to the assessor, he responded with a new increased assessment of $1,100,000. No 5-day notice of the new assessment was given as required by borough code. No 30-day notice to appeal the new assessment was given as required by state law. No notice was given at all. At the second BOE hearing, board members were recorded admitting that we had clearly met or exceeded our burden of proof of overvaluation. Then the mayor, who was not a BOE member, pressured the board to reject professional fee appraisals. And when the board began discussing a compromise of $730,000, the mayor again pressured the board, this time to reject any compromise. The board's final decision, the assessor's reduced value of $818,700 unanimously. This is $198,700 above a professional fee appraisal and more than $350,000 above a local realtor's opinion. This is my testimony, and this is only a small part of what happened in Haines last year. That is why I support, and I request your support, for HB 347 to prevent increases in assessments during the appeal and to help ensure due process. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony this morning, Ms. Canfield, and for keeping your own timer. I didn't have to call you out on that. Next, we have Ray Krieg from Anchorage. Give your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, committee, for taking up this bill. My name is Ray Krieg. I am a resident of Anchorage and the Rail Belt for 50 years and have considerable experience with real estate. We've got to have credibility with the assessment process in any municipality in the state. I have listened to the hearing on Tuesday. I've read the white papers and followed this issue. And I also have understanding of the needs for our municipalities and school districts to raise revenue. I was president of Chugach Electric and am familiar with these processes. And it's just so important that citizens not be steamrolled by the assessment process, or you're just going to have increasing loss of credibility with municipalities from the public. It need go no farther than our previous state assessor telling the Haines Board of Equalization, apparently, that even though statute requires assessments at true market value, it's okay to have 100% above true market value, 200% above true market value. It's appalling what has been going on. So I am grateful for our local legislators, Representative Coulomb and Senator Kaufman, for seeing the problem in the issue and co-sponsoring this. I strongly support HB 347. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony this morning, Mr. Craig. Next, we have Blythe Carter from Haines. State your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Blythe Carter, and I'm from Haines. Thank you for taking the time to hear HB 347, and I support it completely. 30 years ago, my mom came to Haines with no money and two older kids. With grit and determination, we overcame the insurmountable odds and built a home by scouring old construction sites and garage sales for scrap building material. I indicated as much as to the Haines assessor's office, providing numerous photos and have several conversations detailing significant problems. They raised the value of almost $100,000. I could hardly wrap my brain around the horrifying realization that not only was the assessor's office disinclined to help me, they were actively sabotaging my efforts. And so I appeared before the Haines BOE. I felt like a criminal trying to prove my innocence in a process that was stacked against me. I was assumed guilty. I had to give all my evidence to the prosecution, the assessor's office. If the prosecution didn't have to give anything to me, and they set all the deadlines, I felt like a mere mortal at the will of the gods. The evidence I could collect using the so-called helpful hints posted on the Haines website, primarily as dismissed, almost as if the borough was deliberately setting appellants up to fail. On top of that, I was forced to testify public forum and on record about the flaws and poor quality of workmanship in the home that my mother built with sheer force of will. A mother I lost in 2020, who was my best friend, who I still miss acutely every single day. To have to tear down her memory in front of everyone was shockingly painful. And it wasn't just me. I watched so many other appellants testify, nervous, ill-prepared, because they were given no time and no information in order to prove their case. How could they defend themselves if they didn't know what they were defending against? We were betrayed by the very government that was supposed to protect us, mistreated, stomped on, and made so stupid and hopeless, almost worse. We were forced to debase ourselves in our modest homes in front of the DOE and the world at large, thanks to Zoom. It's my fervent hope that the standards and statutes establishing transparency, the protection of individual rights to due process, and common decency in House Bill 437 will serve to prevent such a travesty in the future. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony this morning, Ms. Carter. Next, we have Mr. John Faulkner from Homer. If you could state your name for the record and begin your testimony, you have 2 minutes.
Yes, Mr. McCormick, my name is John Faulkner, lifelong Alaskan, live in Homer, Alaska. I have vast experience in real estate and assessments over a lifetime. And my testimony, I support HB 347. It may not go far enough in terms of protecting the public and citizens from arbitrary and capricious actions. My testimony today focuses on a very large commercial property in Kenai, Alaska, known as Kenai Landing, formerly Ward's Cove Cannery, which I own and developed. And it's a large waterfront industrial tract that was sold by me to Great Pacific Seafoods in 2012. In 2016, they went bankrupt, and I bought it back out of bankruptcy. There are two scenarios from this, both of which ended up in appeal. One was land, and the other was relating to a building, a 30,000-square-foot former fish plant that was completely obsolete and uneconomic. The assessors do not recognize economic obsolescence. That building was assessed for over $400,000. I testified that I had to tear it down. So the cost of the building to tear down was worth more than the building. They refused to recognize economic obsolescence in that warehouse, rejected the appeal, and a year, so I paid roughly $15,000 in taxes, and a year later, I had to tear the building down. The second scenario relates to land. The land had six parcels that were assessed at $200,000 each. I had purchased this property back out of bankruptcy, resold one lot to an adjacent neighbor on an arm's length agreement for $120,000. That was in writing. It was within a year of the appeal. It was rejected. It was rejected, by the way, as too recent because it didn't disprove the methodology at the time that it was actually appraised a year prior.
Mr. Faulkner, here's my point. It's been 2 minutes, if you could just wrap up.
I'll wrap up. There are three. These are not outlier events. A bankruptcy is market, and market is always at work. So an assessment might be reasonable and supported. It doesn't mean it's accurate. Number two, the Board of Adjustment uses burden of proof to protect the assessor, but it's impossible to access that information if it's in a black box, which is how it's handled today. And finally, market transactions, which are arm's length, should trump everything else. And my sales were direct comparables, cash transactions, arm's length, in writing, and they were summarily rejected as too recent. That's my testimony, and thank you for listening.
Thank you for your testimony this morning, Mr. Faulkner. Next, we have Greg Adler from Santa Monica. State your name for the record. Getting your testimony.
Greg Adler. I'm representing the Goldstein Improvement Company in Juneau. Thank you, Chair Mr. McCormick and members of the committee. It's an honor to be here today. My great-great-grandfather, Reuben Goldstein, my great-grandfather, Charlie Goldstein, were pioneers in Juneau, and my mother was active in Juneau, and they'd be proud that I'm involved in the community. thank you for the opportunity to participate in this important hearing to restore public trust in the assessor's office statewide and speak in favor of HB 347. HB 347 is needed because the CBJ that in Juneau has not followed the International Association of Assessing Officers guidelines. The IAAO Standard on Assessment Appeal, written in 2016, states the informal process, and I emphasize the informal process, is highly recommended because it allows a large number of property owners to obtain information, state their grievances, and resolve their appeals in a simple, low-cost manner. Mary Hammond, the chief CBJ assessor, wrote to me on June 28, 2022, and I quote, "My office does not negotiate or have settlement talks with property owners. One can only conclude by denying informal meetings, full disclosures, and a free exchange of information. The CBJ is intent on hiding behind wacky, old, mass appraisal software models. Fundamentally, wrong methodology and the lack of due process is the modus operandi of the CBJ. The CBJ stonewalls property owners, and that is why assessor reform is needed, such as HB 347. The IAAO Assessment Administration book published in 2003 states, typically, the better informed the public,
Mr.
the fewer number of appeals and complaints, and other benefits to the assessor of a good public relations program include a reduction in tension and misconception, a shortening of time required to resolve problems, a public more willing to provide information requested by the assessor, effective communication of needs, and a long-range base of support. Thank you again for giving me the opportunity to share my voice."
Thank you for your testimony this morning, Mr. Adler. Next, we're going to go.
Thank you very much.
Next, we're going to go to Larry Norin. I apologize if I mispronounced that. Calling from Anchorage. For your name for the record, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, and it's Noreen. I have a long history in assessing Board of Equalization, paying taxes, assisting assessors, assisting appellants, and participating in many things throughout the years that affects us all today. You see some of the language you see in Section 4 and Section 5 of the statute that you're looking at before you are not the longstanding customary language you see throughout the country. These have been tweaked ever since an ordinance 21 years ago in Anchorage that drastically changed the entire process. I'm going to jump ahead because of the constraints of time. If you look at Section 4 before you, the original language was that the governing body, the council or the assembly, served to equalize, and the word equalize, the role, and could substitute a panel of experts to sit in its stead. And it's changed a lot. Now we don't even have expertise. Therefore, without expertise, you do not have due process. I would suggest adding that a board shall provide due process to all parties. The next, in Section 5 of what's before you, the language has been deliberately changed, wherein the only grounds for adjustment of assessment are proof of unequal, excessive, improper, or undervaluation. The original language was uniformity, equity, and fair market value. Much easier to understand. But these new words make it impossible for a Board of Equalization to really know anything more than just the issue right before them. There's no oversight. It's all been taken out. Uniformity meant like properties alike. Equity meant like there are areas within the taxing jurisdiction.
Mr. Green, you've exceeded 2 minutes.
And fair market value being the appellant's right not to be overburdened or overphrased. I would really support the addition of that a board must accept an appraisal. I've witnessed that a board in Anchorage being so confused, and it turned out to be from the training it received from the state assessor, this last state assessor. So I attended a training session, and I discovered that these people were not being trained properly and were biased. I would think that...
Mr. Noreen, so you've exceeded the time threshold. If you would be willing to submit your testimony in written form...
I would ask if anybody wants any further explanation or documentation. I would be happy to email something. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're going to take a brief at ease. All right, we are now back on the record. I apologize. We had a technical thing to take care of there. We'll move right along with public testimony. Next, we have Ed Martin from Kenai. If you could state your name for the record, you have 2 minutes.
Yes, my name is Ed Martin, Jr. I'm a resident since 1965. My dad was a pioneer homesteader before statehood, before all this government that we have. Yes, I am here to oppose this bill. In part, I am in agreement with the credentials for a certified assessor, but I'm opposed to, and for the reasons that it's like going to the fox guarding the hen house. Our assembly sets a mill rate. The mill rate's based upon assessed values and tax collection based on those values. I see no way, and this goes all the way back to the founding of our country, may I say, is that you don't go to the fox to get relief on an assessed value. You just don't go there. I believe it should be an all public board of equalization. Maybe only one expert. And that should be actually the assessor to be there and present to be questioned with regards to how he acquired the assessment. Now, I can tell you a horror story about buying a piece of property about a year ago. I bought for assessed value. Okay? The very next year, after I bought the property for assessed value, it went up $54,000 from $80,000. I complained to the assessor at the Kenai Borough. I says, oh, by the way, when you assessed my property, did you assess it for the 50-foot setback also that I cannot do anything with the property rights and ownership of this land? Oh, no, we really didn't. So I'll look at it again. That's what he told me.
Mr.
When it
Martin,
came back,
2 minutes, if you could
it went from a $54,000 higher than assessed value back down to $200 over the previous year assessment at what I paid for the property. There's something going wrong here, folks, and I hope that you hold this over for more testimony because this bill is flawed. Thank you for my testimony.
Thank you for your testimony this morning, Mr. Martin. Next, we have Sherry Sturzak from Anchorage, and I apologize if I mispronounced that. Please state your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Hello, my name is Sherry Sturzak. I'm calling from Chugach, the municipality of Anchorage, and I'm calling in support of House Bill 347. We need standards that meet prevailing market conditions to allow buyers and sellers to know expected pricing levels. Assessor certification will provide assessors with the proper Level 3 certification in accordance with Alaska Association of Assessing Officers. Most important, board members will hear residents' concerns and ensure assessments are not over or undervalued. The heartfelt testimony of the struggles of fellow Alaskans is appalling to hear. Assessor reform is needed to protect residents from exorbitant assessment values. We need fair and equitable representation. Thank you for hearing my testimony today. Again, I support House Bill 347.
Thank you very much for your testimony this morning, Ms. Strizak. Next, we have Kimberly Rosado from Haines. If you could state your name for the record, you have 2 minutes. Okay, all right. We will come back to them, perhaps. Next on the list, we have Katie Begley from Haines. State your name for the record. 2 minutes.
Can you see now?
Yes, Hi. We can hear you. Please go right ahead.
Hi. My name is Katie Begley. I'm a current resident of Haines. Thank you for hearing this bill. There's some much-needed protections. I was an appellant in last year's tax debacle. My community is small, and my little corner of it was raised without supporting sales data. It was raised significantly above the rate of increase of the surrounding area. Many of the people that owned these lots at the time of the increase, my lot included, lived out of state. And it's my understanding that the Alaska Constitution prohibits this very act in Article 9, Section 2. I bought the lot subsequent to the hike because it had become tax distressed. I purchased it at a value that matched similar lots around the state. My assumption was that I would be able to go into the assessor's office and have the discrepancy corrected, but there was no willingness to look at the facts, and I was sent to the BOE, where my evidence was ignored in favor of the assessor's arbitrarily determined trending application. But a look at the actual data reveals that his applied trending is in excess of local sales data, in excess of regional sales data, and in excess of statewide data, and significantly in excess of increases that you would expect to see due to inflation. This is a violation of the state statute concerning full and true value. And when I attempted to report these violations of state statute and of constitutional protections, I was brushed off by the administration, and rules against ex parte communication prohibited my ability to seek redress from my elected officials who are sitting at the quasi-judicial board. Please pass this bill that will now also protect my right to access my elected officials and seek redress of injuries enacted by the processes of the local municipality. Again, I ask you to please support this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Begley. We'll now move on to our next testifier, Mark Smith from Haines. If you could state your name for the record, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Smith. I'm a practicing physician and retired Army colonel and combat veteran. I live in Haines, and I support HB 347. You know, I've listened to all the testimony so far, and rather than just retell another story that's similar, let me fill in some of the blanks. What happened in Haines last year was an abomination. The city manager hired and the city the assembly hired a contract assessor who was the center of a similar controversy the previous year in Juneau, Alaska, which led to his quiet termination. Nevertheless, he came up with a new hybrid assessment model based on cost replacement. In a town where 90% of the houses, no offense to anybody, are what I consider dogs, okay? We appealed 4 properties, all right, at the beginning of the year, back in May. Why? Because this was the 4th, 3rd, and 2nd year in a row we've been suffered increased assessments, okay? Anywhere this year from 11 to 16%. We attempted to negotiate with the assessor's office, but we're told no negotiation. You either accept your assessments or you go to the BOE. So we went. Just prior to meeting in the BOE, we received new in-year assessments, revaluations on our property that now took them all up to between 38 and 45% over the original 2023 assessment. We consider that to be a move of extortion. All right. Despite a lengthy presentation, we ended up settling for the 2023 assessments. What you need to know is that the people you've heard from Haynes already, we are all part of a concerned citizens group that put our civil rights into action and brought this matter to the assembly with no response. So we went to Senator Keel and Representative Story, and now you have that bill in front of you, okay? We also, within a week, collected 500 signatures calling on the assembly to terminate the contract with this assessor. And that happened. Once again, thank you for doing this, and y'all have a blessed rest of your week.
Thank you very much for your testimony this morning, Mr. Smith. The last testifier we have this morning is Maya Moriarty. I apologize if I mispronounced that. If you could state your name for the record, you have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Maya Moriarty. I live in Seward, and I agree with what many people say. I am in support, a qualified support of HB 347, and I want to thank the community of Haynes for getting this bill in front of the legislation. In Seward, in Kenai, Peninsula Borough, there were hundreds and hundreds of appeals last year, and our home was one of them. I've sent email testimony outlining what happened in Seward and what happened specifically to our home, which fortunately I had a conflict and was out of country, and so we were represented at the appeals board by a local realtor who had more knowledge than I did and was able to educate the board about what fair market value was in Seward, and they actually thanked her, and we were able to get our assessment reduced. However, I support what someone said about the verbiage with fair market value to make the verbiage easier to understand, easier to apply. As for the evidence, I had asked the question as to what is a long form appraisal. I wasn't sure what that meant. I didn't get a response, but I asked that a local realtor's market assessment be included as evidence, as well as tax assessments of homes in the area that show a burden of proof that the home is possibly overvalued. In my case, I, you know, through small, we talk, and I found out that homes that are of similar rating to mine, but are also larger on larger acreage, were assessed lower. And this year, it's the same thing. The houses around the corner for me only went up 1%, and our house was lowered, which I expected, as a recourse from last year, like a correction. But our house is still higher than the homes that are bigger on more acreage. And so I feel like the tax assessments of area homes should also be used as evidence because, as mentioned by other speakers, the statute says you should not pay more than your fair share. So why should I, with a smaller home, smaller acreage, pay more than someone who has a larger home and larger acreage?
You could wrap up your testimony, please.
Okay. And then lastly, the board makeup, they should have knowledge of real estate, and it must include members of the public. And thank you again to Haynes for getting this, I guess, in front of the assembly and getting a bill. That's all.
Thank you very much for your testimony this morning. As far as I can see now, I believe that concludes our testimony. The one individual who I said we'd circle back to, it says they're unavailable now. So with that, I think we will now close public testimony for HB 347. Representative Coulomb, would you please come up to the table? We'll just open the floor up for discussion if there's any other questions or comments from members. And I suppose I'd give you the opportunity to, if you just wanted to make some comments.
thank you, Chair McCormick.
So although the public testimony was heavy on the Haines side, how I took that is they're kind of a canary in coal mine. This can happen anywhere in the state. Haines happened to be the most recent and probably the most egregious. Juneau had their own issues as well. And so I think it's just a message of caution that if these things don't get fixed, we're going to get another town next year with a similar issue. So I hope you guys really look at the bill and see how it does give some guidelines to some of these things that have happened in communities and try to give more protection around the taxpayers. So that's all I had.
Thank you, Representative Coulomb. Are there any questions or comments from committee members? Representative McKay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Coulomb, do you think we should add the language for public member to Section 4?
Through the chair to Representative McKay, I thought that was good input and testimony, and I've always approached my bills as working documents, so I will be looking into that. I think that might be an important addition.
Any other questions or comments? Take a brief at ease. All right, we are now back on the record. After some brief discussion, I think we've decided that I will set an amendment deadline for Monday. Let me make sure I have the right date here. Monday, March 18th at noon. And we'll take this bill up again on the Tuesday meeting. So, Representative Coulomb, thank you for being here this morning, and I just want to thank all the callers that came in and spoke to this bill.
Thank you, Chair McCormick.
Of course. Moving on now, we now welcome Representative Kronk and staff, Dave Stancliffe. Thank you for your patience in sitting through all that public testimony. Please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation on HB 151.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Mike Kronk, District 36, which happens to be the largest district in Alaska, representing at least a quarter of Alaska landmass. And to my right is my staff, Dave Stancliffe. For the record, House Bill 151 was introduced last year, April 3rd, 2023. So if we have any testimony or communication that this was sprung upon people, this bill has been in play for nearly a year. HB 151. Ensuring the will of the people in government formation. I believe we just heard some testimony about government and how it can cause a lot more problems. But as laid out in Article 1, Section 12, when the legislature receives a proposal approved by the local boundary commission, we only have two options with a 45-day time limit imposed. First, as a legislature, may reject the proposal through a majority of the House and Senate. Second, we take no action, in which case the Boundary Commission's proposal becomes law. At present in statute, AS 29.05.115, the LBC is required to hold two local public hearings on a proposed borough government with no obligation to follow public testimony. HB 151 ensures that prior to the LBC submitting a proposal under AS 29.05.115 to the legislature, it must be supported by a majority of residents within the area being proposed. And with that, I will turn this over to my staff, Dave Stancliffe.
Dave Stancliffe, staff to Representative Kronk, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This is a very interesting piece of legislation. Sectional wise, it's amending AS 2905-115A, ensuring that before the legislature takes action on incorporation of a borough, they will know that voting age residents within the area support it. Nowhere else in the United States do we have five unelected people, politically appointed people. I say politically because when a governor comes in, a governor has views, a governor has politics, and a governor appoints the members of the commission. That without any vote of the people and only two hearings in an area that they're proposing for a borough, can put on the laps of every legislature the yes or no vote. This bill was drafted to prevent that type of travel down the controversial highway and making sure that before the legislature considers a new borough, that you have an idea whether or not the people in that area support it. Now, this is not a new concept, and I'm going to quote from the Constitutional Convention by a person who's revered by the chairman of the Boundary Commission, Mr. Vic Fisher, a senator. He was part of the Constitutional Convention. And having to do with borough formation, he said, I might say that the legislature may very well see fit to provide that before a borough could be organized, that the people do approve it by referendum. The Constitution neither requires local approval nor local action. Neither does it require that organization take place without local initiative or approval. We're leaving it to the legislature whether a referendum will or will not be required. So, you as a committee will take up this issue, deciding whether or not the legislature should get a little more involved in the formation of boroughs than a 5-member, non-elected, and not particularly credentialed in any given regard, except they are each from a judicial district. That's it. That's the requirement. So in the Constitution, with regard to legislative prerogative, Article 10, Section 12 says that the commission or board, subject to law, may establish procedures whereby the boundaries may be adjusted by local action. I bring that to your attention because there has been some confusion about that. The Boundary Commission, under its formation, is formed and given very specific powers. It's given powers to consider and adjust local boundaries. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say they have the power to create them. So that's their power. And then further along, it talks about the role of the legislature. So constitutionally, you have a 5-member board appointed to consider boundaries and boundary changes, but the legislature, under the Constitution, establishes the procedure, the makeup, and how that board is to act. This bill that Representative Cronk wanted me to draft simply starts to add the public into the process, because under Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution, or Section 2, it says, source of government, all political power is inherent in the people, all government originates with the people, is founded upon their will only, and only instituted solely for the good of the people as a whole. So I raised all that history, and Representative Cronk wanted me to do the research. I have 2 other bills that I may reference if needed, and a lot of documentation, only to allow this committee to understand that you're totally within your rights as an elected body to determine how the commission will act and conduct its procedures. So there is no constitutional conflict whatsoever. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would answer any other questions that might come up.
Thank you, Mr. Stancliffe and Representative Cronk. Are there any questions? I thought you had one the whole time.
Yeah, I thought you were full of questions.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair McCormick. Sorry for the confusion. Thank you, Representative Cronk, for bringing this bill forward. I guess the question I have is, I certainly understand the proposition before us. I guess the determining that a majority of residents of voting age within the area that support the proposal, is the way to do that essentially, because this sort of indicates that it's just a public hearing and whoever shows up wins the day, but it's not necessarily a vote of the people. And just in my very limited experience with issues of land, incorporation, borough management, typically the people that show up to a public hearing are one way or the other, but it doesn't really maybe hold the entire viewpoint of the population at large. So what would be the way that would best be determining the majority of residents of a voting age within an area to support it? I'm not certain that a public hearing would be it. I'd be interested to know your thoughts.
Just wanted to quickly note, too, for some of the questions we do have the Director of Community and Regional Affairs, Central Milan, on the line as well. So, Representative Crum.
Thank you, through the Chair. Representative Ruffridge, great question. We've heard some comments from our actual commission that, boy, imposing any other kind of way of figuring out if a majority of the people would want one or not want one was, you know, seemed like a real burden on them to do so. And with that, I'm going to turn the rest of my staff, Dave Stanquist, can further explain where we're going with that.
Dave Stanquist, staff to Representative Prong. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's a good question. And the decision was, do we prescribe an election? Do we prescribe a poll? Do we prescribe an election like a school district election? Do we do some type of survey? Do we simply ask for more committee meetings than just two in an area before you make a decision and go on? So we wanted to leave that up to the commission to decide how they would best fulfill the requirements to assure the legislature that a majority of the people in the area have obviously decided that they would prefer to be in an organized area. That is about as basic as a democracy gets, is to have that type of choice. Now, there have been, the first nine boroughs in the state weren't formed that way. The first nine boroughs in the state were formed under fiat. They were prescribed under the Local Government Act of 1963. And at the time, the state was at a loss as to how to get off the dime and get organized. And so the legislature, through an act, a direct act, prescribed those nine boroughs. Nothing has happened like that since. And so the commission at this point can hold two hearings and has under no obligation whatsoever to consider anything official in those hearings is giving them direction. And they are under the ability now to simply provide by fiat, not elected officials like the legislature, but appointed, something that the legislature would find very difficult and controversial to have to deal with.
Follow up, Representative Ruffridge.
No, thank you, Chairman.
Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, through the Chair. I didn't get the book open fast enough, so maybe Dr. Mueller can help if Rep. Cronin can't help me. There is a second way to form a borough, the local option. And so in the local option, you do have to get a certain number of signatures because we have a borough forming right now in my district, possibly forming, through this other option. So I'm just curious, under that option, the method is getting a certain number of signatures. Is that what is suggested in this bill to do in the other option as well?
Through the Chair, Representative Hemshute, I'll let my staff, Dave Stanquist, answer that.
Dave Stanquist, staff to Representative Cronk. Through the Chair, Representative Hemshute. There are two different options. One originates from the people as laid out in the first article of the Constitution. That was changed when there was a senator from the Fairbanks Senator area who wanted to force a very large area into being a borough, whether they wanted to or not. In fact, he put language into the budget bill, and at the 11th hour, the senator I was working for at the time caught that language and got it amended out. They also amended statute that said the public process that you just laid out is no longer necessary if a government organization or anyone asks the Boundary Commission to form a borough, the people need not ask at all. They can do it on their own now. So that amendment changed the entire scenario and took the people further away from the decision. Now, there obviously was a difference in whether people should be organized or in a government or not. And, you know, powers down here can change statute, and that changes everything. So there were two more bills passed in 2005 and 2006, codified. Both said that the Boundary Commission on its own, without at least being asked, cannot start to form a borough. So there was some protection there. And there was also language added that that the commission was limited in terms of what it could decide with regard to forming a borough. However, the public is still out of the process. Now, the committee's options are go back to the public process or stick with the language that requires a majority. You could change that language and make it a little more open so it wouldn't have to be a very precise number. That's all up to the committee to decide. But Representative Cronk has been asked over and over. Most of District 36 is in the unorganized borough with 92 communities, not most of them organized. So you can imagine that they're very concerned with the way this particular boundary commission is going. In previous testimony, the other part of this that suggests that he doesn't want the public process, the chair had given testimony that he considers the unorganized borough transitory. In other words, a temporary situation. That's not supported in the Constitution. The Constitution did not say the state will be comprised of boroughs. It said the state will be comprised of the organized borough and the unorganized borough. Two entities, not one. So I think, Representative Himshute, you raise a very good point, and it's up to the committee, but certainly the process could be a lot more public than it is now.
Follow-up, Representative Himshute.
Thank you. I found the section of statute I was looking for, and it's the section B that would follow the A in the bill.
Okay.
And I want to understand through the chair how I should interpret section B. It says, this section may not be construed, so you've got A, which is what we're looking possibly to amend, followed by B. This section may not be construed as granting authority to the local boundary commission to propose a borough incorporation under Article 10, Section 12, Constitution of the State of Alaska. So if I understand that correctly, what I think I'm reading is the local boundary commission should not initiate the action of forming a borough. However, so what would then cause A to happen?
Through the chair, Representative Himshute, and it has happened. And as I discussed, there was an attempt to force a borough where it wasn't wanted. The staff of the Boundary Commission who worked for Commerce and Economic Development at that time, and several people within this these chambers, and I think the governor at the time, drew up and designed a model borough for the entire state. There was a lot of time and effort, and there was some legislative money appropriated to do that. Look at what the possibilities might be. That's what the discussion was. When you get a lot of money, time, and effort, you buy into something. And so without the public asking or wanting, the request was made by the department. The staff works for Commerce, but he serves the commission as staff. So he's got a couple of things going, which allowed that transition of desire to come from the department over to the commission, who then went to work with people in the background and started to put together a borough that was designed on paper by our government agency, and the public had no knowledge of or any desire to have whatsoever.
Follow-up, Representative Himshute.
May, thank you. Through the chair, would it be an insane idea to remove Section A altogether?
Through the chair, Madam Himshute, that depends on what you're going to replace it with. If you removed it altogether, you would leave the situation as it is now so that the Boundary Commission would not have to involve the public except for two hearings and create a borough.
Follow-up, Representative Himshute.
Yeah, if I may explain, what I'm getting at is that it would be the other route that it comes from the people. That route would remain intact, and we would remove the route of whatever outside force suggesting a borough form, rather than getting the input, which I think I agree with, which is what you're trying to do here. What if we just removed the option of having a borough formed by someone other than the people residing in that borough?
That Through the chair, Representative Himshute, I think the idea is one that the representative would be happy with. I can't speak for him. I would say that there is some amendment in statute that perhaps you haven't reviewed yet that would have to take place if we're to try to accomplish that. The goal, of course, is to get the public involved as much as possible. So however that can be achieved, I think Representative Pronk would take a hard look at it.
Thank you.
Vice Chair McCabe.
Thanks, Chair McCormick. So I kind of like this, actually. There is precedence in the state of Alaska through the formation of what's called a LID, or Local Improvement District, where if you have a road that's nobody maintains, the borough doesn't, the state doesn't. If you want, because it's not up to standards, if you want to bring it up to standards, you form this LID, a majority of people vote for it. You have to contribute money, and it, you know, you have some skin in the game, and then you can propose to the borough, in the Matsu anyways. I'm not sure how the other boroughs go, but then they can take it over. It's the same with the gas line. If you have a neighborhood that wants a gas line, if the majority of them vote for it, then the majority of them vote for it, and you all put money into the game, skin into the game, and they dig the trenches and put the gas in. So I think that's where this goes, is we hold a public process. The board themselves are going to have to determine how they know that the majority of residents of voting age support the proposal. We're not telling them how to do it. We're just telling them that they must do it. And, you know, I think a local improvement district is the same way. They all take a vote, you know, whether they all get together and they raise their hands or they do some sort of a paper vote. It's the majority of people that handle that. So I think it's a good idea. I think that right now the board is just kind of out there doing their own thing. And one thing that people don't know, and Alaskans don't know, is we, the legislature, are the assembly for the unorganized borough. I'm only in my fourth year, but I haven't heard one single assembly-like thing that we have done for the unorganized borough. They're just kind of out there. And we haven't done any kind of taxation, mill rates, road repairs for the unorganized borough. We haven't done any of that kind of discussion that you normally see at a local assembly. And this might kind of be the first, really, because where else are our new boroughs going to come from other than the unorganized borough, that big chunk of almost half of Alaska that has no real organization or no real structure, if you will. So anyways, thanks for bringing this forward. I appreciate it.
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, I appreciate that. And I think the prior testimony of the prior bill kind of highlighted the reason we're here. You know, this is about the people. We are the ones that are elected. We are the legislature. We determine what our commissions and boards should be doing, not them. You know, it comes to my attention that there may be some communication being sent in to this committee. And I would ask that communication be sent through the Commissioner of Commerce, since the Boundary Commission is under the Commissioner of Commerce. We are the people. So we're just, and to come back to Representative Ruffer's questions, how is this determined? I mean, personally, if it was up to me, I would say before a borough is formed, that it has to be a vote of the people. And if that's too much to do, then why are we here? I do not think that would be a hard thing to do. We have an election. The people get to vote. If it's determined that they want to create a borough, great. If not, then it doesn't happen. But if I was king for a day, that's what I would do. The people are why we are all here. We are all elected by the people. They should all have a voice. So thank you for allowing us the communication and being able to present this.
Thank you, Representative Kronk. I think we do have some more questions, actually. I apologize. Felt like that was kind of a good wrap-up statement. But Representative Mears, please go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry if I missed some cues there.
That's okay.
Trying to process, since this is outside of my usual. So through the chair, I'd like to just clarify, the current public process opportunities is the two required public meetings for the Boundary Commission and then whatever public process we have in the legislature. Is that correct?
Dave Stanko, staff to Representative Cronk, through the chair, Representative Mears. It's partially correct. The way the system works now, the way it can work, if the Boundary Commission gets a request from a government entity or anyone to form a borough, they go out into the area that the boundaries will be around and they hold two public hearings. After that, they make a decision. Now, they may review economic data. They may review other things. I don't know that they would or wouldn't. I would assume that they would. But they alone make the decision by a vote of the five members. Now, because that has not come from the public by request, they are required under the Constitution to submit it to the legislature, and they have a time frame in which they must submit that. And then the legislature is, in a de facto sense, that becomes law unless the legislature, a majority in both bodies, vote it down. So what you got here is you've got five people with a lot of ability to affect boundaries, creating boroughs, not adjusting boundaries. And then the legislature can only do one thing, vote it down. If they let it stand, it's law.
Representative Mears, follow up.
Thank you. Through the chair, I've got concerns about the last statement, which says, and determines that a majority of residents of voting age within that area support the proposal. That actually seems like an impossible bar to me because there's some things that aren't defined. A majority of residents of voting age, I don't think that's a standard that we use elsewhere. It would be registered voters within a district, within the precincts affected, something like that. And then how often do we get more than a 50% participation rate in voting in what scenario? So it doesn't specify what type of an election. And that's a really high bar to me of all of the registered voters to even get that participation level, much less either in approval or disapproval.
Dave Stanko to Representative Cronk through the chair. That's why we wrestled with this for some time. And maybe someone on the committee or along the way will come up with a better way of trying to assess how the people feel. I know there was a meeting in Delta when the movement was on to force a borough into an area, and it was like 98% to 2%, 98% opposed, 2%. The thing that's most bothersome is there's nothing in the statute that says that the Boundary Commission has to pay attention to the public meeting opinion at all, and only two hearings in an area that maybe as big as the Fairbanks North Star Borough or bigger. So they're, you know, they have kind of open season. Now, that isn't to suggest that they're going to be irresponsible or they're going to be just on a borough mission, but it's also a lot more open than it could be. I think if there's some language that suggests that the Boundary Commission has to have a very good handle on the amount of public support, that's kind of just general. That could possibly work if you don't want to be more specific. I know on school district elections that the state accesses a data, voters and citizens. You can do it. Everybody applies for a PFD, it seems. So you could use that list to get if you wanted to do an election. If you just had language as a committee that said they have to have a very good number in their mind or a percentage, You could commission a poll in very short order and get an idea, if you were a commissioner, how the people basically feel about becoming an organized area. So it's really Representative Mears wide open. I don't think Representative Cronk is married to this particular language. So,
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair McCormick. More just a comment. There might be a question that comes out of it, but I think, Mr. Sancliffe, thank you so much for all the work that you've done in sort of defining some of these really complicated issues. And I think what you're speaking to in many cases is that There is always a challenge that's presented with any organized or unorganized or change of boundary position. And the local boundary commission oftentimes is put in sort of that impossible scenario of trying to determine the will of a people group. And oftentimes that people group is very hard to access. They don't want to be accessed. They don't really, they kind of just want to be left alone. That's the general Alaskan way. For the most part, people don't really like change all that much either. And so I think there is a necessity to have sort of a multi-factored approach, but all the factors need to include an attempt to determine the desire of the people group. And ultimately, I think there should be, I think, some sort of education process included in that, because I'll tell you just from my experience, it took me about a year of going through LBC language to even come to a close understanding of what their requirements are, much less my own requirements as a member of a municipal body. And so I think sometimes an LBC or a desire kind of comes forward to the people without, and the people really have no idea what's on the table. And so they're in some cases even required to vote on something that they, or give an opinion on something that they just know is different. I'm not even quite sure why or why not they don't like it. And so I guess my question would be, is there a way to sort of, I think this process should also be long. It shouldn't be a quick process. But if we're going to engage in the process, there should be a reasonable idea that at the end of it, a determination can be made that the process was done rightly and well. And I don't think that's happening now. I think that everyone ends up a little frustrated. LBC is frustrated. The people are frustrated. The end result is frustrating. That's just my experience with it thus far. I feel like this bill is a good start. I'm not entirely certain that it gets quite all the way into the end of the problem, but appreciate the effort.
Through the chair, Representative Ruffage, the problem can be defined quite well when you start out with who are the people that are appointed and what are their prejudices. Are they pro-government or are they unbiased? Can they make an unbiased decision? And we had another bill before the committee that went out 39-0. And we have a commissioner that is opposing that bill. He opposes the idea that the legislature actually take a step to try to balance the board and gets one person out of five from an unorganized area. And now he's getting involved in this piece of legislation too. And on the piece of legislation that passed with major support out of the House and the other body, we have an understanding that he may have actually gone to the governor and asked him to veto it. So we have a commissioner that's very politically active, has very strong ideas about what the state should look like, whether it should be organized. And when that happens, people flare up and come to Representative Kronk and say, do we have a shot at being heard when it comes to the issue of boroughs? So your point is very good. It should be a long, detailed process, should not be rushed. But the other part of it is, the members should be unbiased. And I don't know if anybody asked the question before they're appointed. Because if you have a biased five-member board with constitutional direction and authority, you as the legislature can find that very difficult to deal with.
Rep. Pimshoot, I do have you in the queue, but I think Vice Chair McCabe had a question or comment in regards to Rep. Ruffage. So, Vice Chair McCabe.
Thanks. So, through the chair, as far as the election, we've done this before. The city of Big Lake, we had an election in 2015, I think, to determine whether or not we wanted to be a city. The Division of Elections helped us out. There was ballots sent out. They drew the boundaries. They sent the ballots to every house that was in the boundary, every voter in that area. So there was, and there was much discussion. There was meetings and city council meetings. But I can see through the current law where you could publish, two meetings and not have anybody show up. I mean, we do public testimony sometimes here where you gavel in, nobody's there because nobody has seen the announcement. that people don't continually look in some of these newspapers or online things. No public testimony, we gavel out. Well, we held a public meeting. We held public testimony. And I can see where this needs a little bit of massaging, this particular law, because of the different time period that we're in compared to when the law was promulgated years ago. Now we need to make sure that it's not a politically motivated board, so to speak, and there's a little bit of a tighter control on it, and frankly, giving control to the citizens. This is exactly what Representative Kronk said. This is the majority of residents of voting age within the area that support the proposal. You know, I think the Division of Elections can well handle that language, and I think, like they did with Big Lake, they're well equipped to figure out how the residents of the boundary that we draw for the next borough, how they feel. And I think, you know, I suppose we could amend it and make it tighter, but I think that this is exactly right. Government is for the people, and they need to have a say-so in it. And with five-member board, I didn't even really know the local boundary commission was a thing until the Big Lake election. You know, so anyways, my comment, sorry.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative McCabe, we agree. You know, I represent a really big and diverse district, but I'm just going to pull for my one section over in the eastern interior. We have communities that are still 100 miles apart, you know, the 200 miles apart. And we all know when you have a public meeting, it doesn't matter if it's a state or anything. We used to, and I'll throw this as an example, we used to have a meeting, let's say the state had a meeting on a land sale, and they would schedule it September 10th. Well, guess what everybody's doing September 10th? They're moose hunting. Mm-hmm. Have a meeting, two people came, we're good, and that's what goes, right? And so, again, we're really just trying to be there, and let's say we're here for the people. Let's make sure that the people are the ones being represented, and not again, I don't you know, intend to assume anything on the boundary commission of what they do, but I believe the voice of the people has to be number one, no matter what. And how we get there, I appreciate the comments and any ideas to get there. We're trying to keep it simple, and allowing them the discretion to solve some of these issues. Obviously, that is their job also, but bottom line is we want to be there for the people in those areas, that's the bottom line. So thank you for statements, questions.
Follow-up.
So one follow-up, I guess maybe I didn't – my point was the local boundary commission knows how to do this. They did it with Big Lake in 2015. They know how to take the votes. They know how to get the will of the people. They know that the people are going to hold the meetings. If they hold some meetings, that's even better. And this is not a new thing to them. And we're not taking away any of the powers that they haven't already done. Instinctively, I think they know what they're supposed to be doing. They did it for Big Lake. They've done it. They did it for Kodiak years ago when Kodiak expanded the boundaries. I remember that. So I think we're just kind of putting it in words on a piece of paper. So thanks.
Through the chair, on the subject of meetings, you brought up a good point, because meetings, some are very successful, some are not. But under our laws and regulations, when we post for a meeting, we're supposed to have everything we're going to discuss, and we have to follow that very closely. And there was 2 days ago a meeting that was held by the LBC. We got the agenda. Myself and another staffer, Representative Kronk, wanted us to monitor the meeting because the agenda was to make a decision on the changing from a first class to a second class city in Tanana. And they took that up, and it was a 5-0 support. Okay. Then they added two bills to the agenda, HB 279 and HB 151. Representative Kronk was in joint session. I can't speak for him on an issue with a boundary commission, so we just listened. And the chairs very eloquently. He's legally trained, put forth arguments and a document that he had prepared. And without the committee hearing Representative Cronk or him having a chance to discuss with the Boundary Commission why he's doing what he's doing and get input and so forth, they produced testimony that they're going to submit to this committee. And unfortunately, when we checked with the staff that worked for the Boundary Commission, we asked them if there was an addendum to the meeting announcement. Maybe we'd missed it. We haven't got an answer yet. Maybe we did miss it. But just a good example of how a meeting can go one way or the other based on who knows about it and what they're able to do and talk about. So this isn't to, you know, negatively charge you against the commission. It's just that Representative Cronk wasn't available at that time. And perhaps the testimony that you received might have been different if he'd had a chance to talk with the members of the commission. And that's all conjecture, but just a good example of how meetings can go kind of off one way or the other.
Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you, Chair McCormick. Through the chair, I would just like to support what Mr. Stancliffe just brought up. We had the State Board of Education take action without prior notice as well on a fairly consequential matter. So we have examples of where boards and commissions sometimes work outside of what would be called good process. And then I just wanted to also support the comments about, in my own district, 21 communities that are only accessible by boat or plane, where are you going to have the meeting? In which community would you have the meeting? So I can see why we need to address this and take a look at it. I was wondering if we could go to Director Mueller and get a description of the community option process or the local option process, because within that might be a nugget of how we would get to this, you know, finding the majority of residents. And I know that it's been done through elections. Elections, by the way, cost, in my hometown of Sitka, it's $10,000 to run a special election. So I saw they had the travel for the Boundary Commission in here, but I didn't see anything about the expense of the election. So if Director Mueller would be willing to run through what that local option looks like, is there a point in the local option boundary formation process where the input is collected from the local citizens that could be replicated here, is my question.
Director Mueller, if you're on the line, could you please answer that question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please go right ahead.
Okay, thank you. This is Sandra Mueller. I am the director of the Division of Community Regional Affairs within the Department of Commerce. And thank you for the question. As the representative has mentioned, we are reviewing a process within her district for a potential new borough. And to answer the question, the process is quite lengthy. There are, as mentioned previously, a required number of meetings within the region to be affected. It is not a maximum, it is a minimum. And as I believe Representative Vice Chair Cronk, there can be a large number of activities and process that's available. So there are two processes that we currently have to hear about borough formation. And one is the as mentioned, the local option, in which the affected areas are able to vote, and it is a vote of the people through Division of Elections. That's the local option, and that the other one is the legislative process. And again, that the process to get to either of those decisions is identical. In other words, we do have a meeting within the affected area, and there is a step-by-step, very thorough evaluation by staff. There's a draft produced in which the petitioner and others can comment. We can accept public comment for 30 days. This recent example, we extended it to 90 days, and it is a fairly robust involvement Obviously, depending on the area and the location, it provides what kind of input we may have. So it is available. We again take about a year to do a full process, assuming the petition meets the standards that are set out in statute. So I apologize. Have I answered the question?
Representative Hemshue, please.
Thank you. Director Mueller, my question specifically is in the local option, there is a point at which there's an election. Could that election, however it's delineated and described, be used to fulfill the purpose of the bill that we're looking at right now? Could a similar election be described in this bill, House Bill 151?
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Hemshue, this is Director Mueller with DCRA. Yes, it can. We do not, I believe as the bill is stated right now, it does not specify, but that was one of our concerns is we would like clarity on how that would be implemented. So yes, having an election, the last step in a local option is for the community and held in the region that it is affected, there would be an election held by the Division of Elections. So a similar process was used for this, that would be acceptable, or that would make sense.
So thank you, Director Mueller. I would just like to note for the committee's awareness, we're at 9:59. I'm happy to go a little over, but if we could just be cognizant of the fact that run out of gas. Follow-up, Representative Hemshue? No. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Director Mueller. Are there any questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Kronk. Vice Chair Kronk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I look forward to the next meeting. I don't want to extend any further. I know we have a deadline of 10 o'clock. So appreciate your time and listening and the great dialogue. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I want to thank members, too, for the extensive conversation on this bill. For the committee's awareness, I will set an amendment deadline for 151 for Monday at noon as well. However, if that, for whatever reason, is not workable, we'd be happy to extend that for you and make it work. But we will take this up again on Tuesday. The time is 10 a.m., and this hearing of the Community and Regional Affairs is now adjourned.